I was full term with Alexis. I never saw her. I never held her. And that's all I know about her.
And when was Alexis born?
She was born on the 15th of April, 1963.
Tell me a bit about, and briefly, when you met Alex and when you got married.
We both worked for the same company. He's better known now as lots of people know. He worked in the drawing office, I worked in the wage office. We met, and he was due to start his national service. So, 12 months later, we got married. And then after nearly 2 years, I found out I was pregnant with Alexis.
And what was your pregnancy like?
It was trouble-free. It was trouble-free right until the very end. In those days, they was asking new mothers to have the babies at home. And my mother had a bit of a horrendous time when she had me, so she was a bit worried about that. So they arranged for me to go in a nursing home. It's called... And you only went there to book in, and then your own doctor took care of you until the end of your pregnancy. And they didn't have what they've got today. You know, there'd no scans, nothing. And I just thought everything was normal. But obviously it wasn't right. It wasn't normal right from the start, but I didn't know that. The afterbirth was over the neck of the womb. And although I had what they used to call then toxemia, it's now known as preeclampsia, I had them both together, so obviously she didn't stand a chance.
So you had no notion at all about these complications?
No. None at all, no. Apart from about 4 days before I had her, when it all started to show, started to swell up. And because it was so near Easter, Mum said to me, I think you should make an appointment, let the doctor have a look at you. Because, you know, if you're feeling poorly over Easter, you might not be able to see your doctor. So I did. I went along and said I was worried about, I felt as though I was puffing up and swelling up. He said to me, can you still see your feet? I said, yeah, but you're all right. Nothing else was done. And then after a couple of days, that was when it all happened. And it was all too late. She'd possibly gone the day before, I don't know, but that was how you know, it was the norm in those days. Nothing like it is today. No blood pressure's taken. No ultra scans or anything, and just this cold trumpet that you used to put on your tummy to listen to the heartbeat, and that was it.
Did you have any understanding of stillbirth?
No, I never remember any of my friends having stillbirths or anything. No. Perhaps I lived a bit of a sheltered life because obviously it's been going on since time began, but no, I had no idea, no.
Tell me what happened when you went into labour.
It was all back pain. I was in agony with my back. And then eventually I started to bleed. And it was in the middle of the night, and Alec... He phoned the doctor. We didn't know what else to do, and he did come. He came immediately, and he did make a reference to he didn't think the baby was alive, and they rang for an ambulance, and I was taken to. And But nobody there said to me the baby was dead. And of course I had to give birth to her. And I was hemorrhaging. I was hemorrhaging terribly. And they had to start then and give me blood transfusion. And I was left in a room for quite a while on my own. And then I remember them bringing, the doctor bringing in students. And I remember him saying, "You might never see this again." And I thought he meant me. But he didn't. I think it was because of the two things that was going wrong with me. The afterbirth was all breaking away. And my high blood pressure with the, not toxemia, the preeclampsia now, you know. But nobody talked to me. Nobody told me what was going on. And then eventually, Alec came back. He'd gone home. And I don't know whether they rang him or he rang the hospital to see what was going on, and they asked him if he would come back right away, which he did. And he didn't know himself, you know, what was happening. He knew the baby, well, you know, was dead, but then his concern was for me because I was hemorrhaging so much. But still, they didn't talk to him and say, you know, well, we'll do this, we'll do that. Nothing was said. Till eventually they moved me then into a labour ward, which is nothing like they are today. There was another girl in the next bed. She was in labour. And just a curtain between us. And then they asked Alec to go. And eventually, you know, I gave birth to her. And, they all came in when that was happening, you know. And then as I was giving birth to her, I started to fit. And they put Alexis in a bucket with a lid on, an enamel bucket. I can still hear that lid clang now. And that was it. Didn't see her. Didn't get a glance of her. Nothing. Nobody said anything to me. I think I had to ask what it was, because there's no scans in those days to tell you whether it was a girl or a boy. And I had to say, you know, "You've had a daughter," they said. That was it.
Do you remember what you felt? It must have been such an extraordinary experience.
It all felt so unreal. That's how it felt, really, as though, was it happening, you know? I couldn't believe the coldness of everybody towards me. Nobody, apart from the actual midwife that had been with me when I was in labour, who was absolutely lovely, she was an Australian girl. None of the others, the doctors, none of them even spoke to me. It was though I might as well have been dead along with her for the attention that I got. It was just unbelievable. And it's so wrong, because you never forget that. You never forget the coldness of them. If it had only been an odd word they'd have said of comfort to you, it would have made such a difference, but they didn't.
Do you remember delivering Alexis?
Yes. Yes, I do. Yeah. I had back labour. All the pain was in my back, so it was very painful. I don't remember them giving me anything to help me in any way with the pain. I don't know whether they did in those days, whether there was any pethidine or gas and air. There was no gas and air when I had Alexis. It was just a matter of just going from one stage to another stage until it was over. And yes, I do remember. And, I remember them pulling her away, and then they put her in the bucket.
As a mother, what did that feel like?
Because it was my first baby, I really didn't know what to expect. You know, I thought, is this what happens to everybody when they have a baby? Although the ones that live, obviously, you get to hold them. I didn't. But there were so many round the bed. I don't know what they were all doing when I think back. I think there was a bit of a crisis at that point, and it, you know, it, so many came in. I don't know what I was thinking in the end. I just thought, perhaps this is what they do, and that was it. I did think of the girl in the next bed. To me, that was horrendous, even for her. But they didn't seem to bother about things like that even then, you know. And then after they'd taken her away and they'd sorted me out a bit, they just left me. They just went out and they left me. And eventually another doctor came and said they would have to take me back into theatre because I needed stitching. And then they just eventually took me in there and stitched me up. And then it was a bit more trauma. They put me in a ward with a girl that already had a baby. And I just felt that was cruel. I did ask, could I not be put in a ward on my own? They just said no. And it just seemed to go from one thing to another. There was, in those days, they only liked your husband to visit you, so you didn't have a lot of visitors either. Although my mum did come in to see me, but not like today, you know, where they can have family come in and see you and all the rest of it. No, there was none of that. And then again, they had matrons in those days that ruled with a rod of iron. And probably be very good at her job, but she was very cold person. Nobody ever said to me why it had happened, what had caused it. You know, no reassuring, you know, this won't happen again or anything like that. And then on the Wednesday, it was always the visitors could come in an afternoon. But of course, Alec was at work, so Mum came. And the girl in the bed opposite that had got her baby, I was having to have another transfusion, and she drew the curtains round the bed. She said her husband didn't like the sight of blood. So I'd been lying there for 2 or 3 hours just looking at the curtains. Mum went mad. Who's done this? I said, well, you know, her husband don't like blood. She said, oh, I'm not having this. Pull them back. And then it was just a matter of, you know, getting time over to get well enough to go home, because I couldn't wait to go home then.
What was it like for you having had a baby, but having no baby? Did anybody talk to you at all about what had happened?
Nobody. Nobody told me what had happened and how it happens or why it happened. Nobody. Nobody. So then I blame myself then. I thought I'd done something wrong. There wasn't even the books in those days to read on like there is for, you know, today when you're having your first baby, you can go out and buy a book and it tells you, this stage shows you a little diagram and that. There wasn't things like that. And no, not really. I don't think they even told Alex how it had happened.
Tell me more about blaming yourself.
Because I didn't really know what had happened and why it had happened, I just thought I'd done something wrong. And then I started to think, well, perhaps I can't have babies. You know, perhaps there's something wrong with me. And didn't really see a lot of doctors while I was in there. It was just mainly the nursing staff and this matron who was very unapproachable. And so I sort of went home not knowing what had happened and why it had happened, because nobody explained anything. And you feel inferior. You know that, I mean, even in those days, young girls was having babies and giving them up for adoption. And, you know, and I thought, well, you know, I'm 23. And yet the young girls of 16 can have babies. There must be something wrong with me. And I really did think it was that, you know, maybe I won't have any more babies. And then I had to face it then when I got home. And that was hard. Because I found that girls I was pregnant with at the same time, when I did start to go out, they would cross over. Because they didn't know what to say to me. And then the doctor came and he said, he came in and he was quite a caustic speaking man. Right, he said, so what have they done with you? So I told him briefly I'd had to have all these transfusions, etc. And he said, oh, right, well, I think yourself lucky you're not dead along with your baby. And my mum was there. My mum said to him, get out. Get out and don't come back. Because then again I started to think that was my fault. In a way he was saying, well, you know, you're lucky you're here. It's your fault. And I couldn't get that out of my head. That I'd done something that had caused it. So then I had to find a new doctor, which I did, and he was such a lovely doctor. He was so different. And he talked to me. He tried to explain to me that, no, it wasn't your fault. These things do happen, but they don't happen, thankfully, that often. And obviously you've never come to face it before, and it's very hard. And then I had a midwife came in to look after me as well. And apparently she'd delivered most babies in the village over the years, and she was very well thought of. And she said to me, don't try for a baby for 12 months. Let your body get over it, she said, and you will have another baby, I'm sure you will. And I did what she told me. I waited 12 months and I had no trouble. And I started with Jane, but was traumatised through the pregnancy. I never enjoyed any of my pregnancies, frightened to death of it, going to the end and it all going wrong. I've never seen any of my grandchildren born. I couldn't sit in a room in case it all went wrong at the end. So really, it spoils you for life. And all because you're not treated right. And I'm sure that should never happen now.
Can I ask you how you grieved when you came home after Alexis?
I didn't talk about it. I've never talked about it. People round here never knew it had happened to me until that went in the paper. I didn't talk to the girls about it a lot. So consequently, they didn't know much about it, I had nothing I could tell them, really. I didn't know where she was. I knew Alec had to go and register the baby. And, you know, I must have said to him what they're going to do with her. And he just said, well, you know, they're going to have her buried. And then we went to the hospital at one point and asked where she was, and they just said she's been buried somewhere in Stockport in one of the cemeteries. So no internet then. You couldn't go on any internet. And then, I'd started to have more children, and it got, you know, one day we will find her. Till the day came that we did go and look for her. We went to the big crematorium in Stockport, and they sent us to the Central Library. They said everything was on microfilm, and we looked through it and we found two burials around the time Alexis would have been taken there. And one was on the, she was born on the 15th. There was just this one buried on the 17th. A girl of 31 she was. And underneath it said stillborn. So I knew they'd put a stillborn in the grave. And that's when we went back to the cemetery. And I seen a different lady, and she said, oh, did they not get the little book out for you? We have a little book for all the stillborn babies. I said, no. She said, well, then I'll get it. And she brought it, and it was there, and she gave us a grave number. We went to look for it and couldn't find it because of no stone. It was just grass. And I said to Alec, I'll have to go home. I said, I could be walking on her. Where's the grave? Me thinking that everybody was put in a proper grave, you know, but no, there was no stone or anything. And eventually I did ask if we could put something on. They said, no, the grave belongs to somebody. It's registered to somebody. You can put flowers on, but no, you can't put anything else on. So for a while I just bought something that you could stick in the grass and put flowers on, and then I got a bit angry about it, and I thought, no, she's having a proper pot on it. And I went into the village here to where they make them, and I've had a proper stone flower pot put with the name put on it. And I just feel that if they do say anything to me, I can only say, well, I'm sorry, but I didn't ask you to put her in here. Because just over the other side is where all the babies are buried. And that haunts me, to think that she was just put in a grave with somebody that I don't know who it was. And then I'm told, no, you can't put anything on the grave. And it's as though she didn't belong to us. She's just taken away, and they took over, and that was it. And I just hope and pray it never happens to anybody else. Because it's one of the cruelest things you can do to a couple. Because Alec was just as affected as I was. I mean, now I know I can go there and put flowers on for her, but it's not the same.
Can I take you back to being back at home after giving birth to Alexis? Did you and Alex grieve in different ways?
I think he must have found me very hard to talk to at the time. Alex far more emotional than I am. I tend to just not talk about it. I Alec can get very angry over situations, you know. And I think he felt a lot of anger that I wasn't looked after. And then, of course, you know, the fact that they were allowed to, even though it was your baby, just take them and put them in somebody else's coffin. I never knew they could do that, but obviously they can. They could. And it must have taken a while for people to get it changed. Perhaps I should have gone along with them and done something, but of course by then I was, you know, adding to my family, and I've got quite big gaps between my girls in their ages, you know, so by the time we found her, the girls were growing up, you know. And yes, they go to the cemetery now, but they don't talk to me about it a lot because they've nothing to talk about, really. You know, I've no picture to show them or anything. But I'm so glad for people these days that things have changed. And I do think any nursing staff should take into account how traumatising it is for those people that have had a stillbirth, and to talk to them about it and not just leave them in the dark.
When did you name Alexis, and how did you mark special days like her birthday and death day?
Well, when I was pregnant, because there was no scans to tell you if you were having a girl or a boy, and you come to choose names, we'd said Jane for a girl. And when she was born, and Alex said he had to go and register her, he said, "What shall I call her?" I said, "Don't call her Jane. I might have a Jane one day." So he chose her name and he called her Alexis. Now, because I didn't talk about her, I never called her by her name. Now, when I spoke about it to the papers in years to come, I didn't say she was called Alexis, so they thought she was unnamed, but she wasn't. And even members of the family never asked me if she had a name. Because one of my sister-in-laws, when I said we'd called her Alexis, turned around and said, "That's a lad's name." I said, "No." I said, "Jane went to school with a girl called Alexis." So I said, "No, she's called Alexis, mainly after her dad." So it's only since I've found her and the girls refer to her now as Alexis, you know, if you go, "Have you been to the cemetery to Alexis?" they'll say, you know. But even members of the family, apart from my mum and Alec, and I had a very dear friend, Jean, who had been friends with all my life. Did they ever talk to me about her? Nobody else did. It was as though I'd never had her. And lots of people I knew didn't know I'd had a stillbirth, especially when I moved here. I never told anybody. And of course, when the article went in the paper, people would say, "I never knew you'd had another baby, Marjorie," you know. Because in a way I felt inadequate. How could I talk about a baby that I didn't know where she was? So I just didn't say anything. I think I did tell you the story about the girl in the next bed. Now she talks to me about her, and I see her, I always go to see her once a week, because she's recently lost her husband, and She's been a true friend. And possibly talk to me more about her than anybody apart from Alec. Because she was there when it happened. And she said even she was traumatised when she realised they put her in a bucket. I mean, that was wrong. That she should be in that room when that was happening. It wasn't right. But there you go.
How important do you think it is to be able to talk about it?
It's very important, I think. And I think that is why I'm like I am now. I do think counselling, especially with somebody that you don't know, can open up a lot of things for you and help you. Because as I say, when I was having Jane, I didn't enjoy my pregnancy at all. And the doctor I was under at, well, he'd been there years. And he was just lovely. And he knew that I was frightened. And he kept reassuring me, you know, come on, it's not going to happen this time. And all the rest of it. And there you go. And then I had Jill and I was just the same as having her. And then when I was having Amy, I was nearly 40. And I remember asking somebody at the hospital, was I going to have a scan? Because the scans was just coming out then, you know. And he said to me, what do you want a scan for? I said, well, I am nearly 40. He said, well, nothing's going to happen. You've got to forget that now. She'll be fine. And then right at the end, my blood pressure shot up. And right away, they kept me that day. And I had her the following morning. So how different in those years it had changed. It was just an indication that things could have started to go a bit wrong. And she was delivered and she was absolutely fine.
What do you think the impact of Alexis has been on you and Alex and your family?
I don't think it's made any difference with Alec and I. Because you can always talk to him. I can always talk to Alec. And he'd say to me, don't be silly. You couldn't stop that happening, you know. But no, I don't think it's had any effect on us in that sense. Because he loves his girls, Alec. And he'd have loved Alexis. He just likes children, full stop. And no, because he's very protective in that way. And quite emotional, as you know. But no, he's been good, really. He's been very good.
And how have things changed since you have somewhere to go and visit her?
It's changed, but it haunts me. Alec's been the last couple of times on his own. Just grass. It's just, you wouldn't think anything was there. You know, the girls have put little things on, little angels, and nobody's ever said, take them off. Because I don't think they probably know the gardeners and that do the graves. They don't know that it's not the owners that are putting these things on. It's the likes of us that have only just found out our baby's in there somewhere. I know it sounds silly, but we've always took the dog with us when we've gone. And he lies at the foot where I imagine she is, and he won't get up. I've got a picture of him somewhere. Of him lying there and we're saying, come on, come on. And he just looks at you won't get up. And so he senses, probably because we're upset and all the rest of it, I don't know. He just sits there. When you walk on where there's graves and got nothing around, it's very spongy. Oh, it's... I don't know, it just haunts me. I don't think I'd feel quite the same if it had a proper edge to it and a headstone, even if there's somebody else's name on it, then it's just grass. It hasn't even got a, you know how you get a mound. It's just flat. So it was just, it just felt like a, you know, another nail in the coffin, really, when I found out she was buried in that. And you know, I've had letters from people since, you know, and they've said when they've found where the babies have been, possibly like smaller cemeteries than what Alexis is in, and they've put things like a cross for them, and but I can't even do that. So say I have put this, we have put this proper flower thing on with her name and just the date she was born, you know. Nobody said move it, you know. But I don't think there's probably any family left that own the grave, you know. Because if the deeds are somewhere, then that's it, isn't it?
What would you like people to know about stillbirth?
I'd like them to know that whoever's giving birth to that baby, there is nothing they can do. There's nothing they can do to stop it. And just to talk about it afterwards and not do what I did and shut it away. Because it doesn't help. Because it's always there, it never goes away. Because it's even affected me now with my own daughters when they've had babies. I've not been able to go in the labour ward with them. I mean, luckily, the husbands have looked after them and the sisters have been there. And they've never asked me because they know why I don't want to be there. Because I'm a wreck. All the time they're in labour, I'm an absolute wreck. And 4 years ago, this Christmas, my granddaughter was pregnant and she got preeclampsia. And yeah, they knew about it and they treated her. And she had the baby and the baby was fine. But, I couldn't sleep. I thought, it's all going to happen again. But you see, things have changed as regards... Once they find preeclampsia is coming on, they can do something about it. And not let... I mean, I think sometimes it does progress and it does still happen, obviously. But they can do more now than they could then. And that's a blessing in itself. But I do think talking about it right from day one helps, and it's something I didn't do, and it's just scarred me for life.
What would you like to say to clinical staff, or what advice would you like to give to clinical staff caring for parents who have or who have had a stillbirth?
To be very caring with them, because what's happened to them, stay with them for the rest of their life. Reassure them that what has happened is not their fault. It's nature. And talk to them. Ask them how they feel. Don't just come in, do what you've got to do and go out. I know they're all busy. I know they've a lot to do. But just 5 minutes at a time would be a great help. And a great healer. So because they never talked to me, I never talked to anybody else. And I've carried it now for, what would she be now? I was 23 and 76. And I still find it hard to talk about. So I do think the clinical staff, don't expect the doctors to come in. I know they're very busy, but do think a nurse could spare 5 minutes and just talk to them. And please don't put them in a ward with another newborn baby. That was the cruelest part, I felt. That baby cried like they all cry. And the girl herself, I think, was very embarrassed. She used to say to me, "I'm sorry, she's crying." And she used to say, "It's all right, she's got to cry." And it couldn't have been easy for her, you know. And, yeah, they've got to be a bit more caring and try and just help them through those first few days. And, I mean, it doesn't happen today, putting them in somebody else's grave, because I was going to say, and never withhold where they've put them. Just think, very thankful that there are people like Sands and that, you know, are there for them to go and talk to now. That must be a great help. But there wasn't anything like that then. And when I was leaving the hospital, I was told by the matron to go home and just get on with it. Forget about it. You can't do that. And that's how they treated you. So never let that slip back to anything like that again.
What difference has it made to you knowing where Alexis is buried, and how has it affected you?
It gave me closure, because for all those years I hadn't a clue where she was. I have to say, when the man from the cemetery pointed at this patch of grass, I couldn't believe what I was looking at. And I thought, I can't believe she's under that. But as time's gone on now, I realise that I've got somewhere I can go, and I know she's there. I can put flowers on her grave. And when it's a birthday and it's Christmas, we always go at Christmas and put something a bit Christmassy on her grave. And I also think of the girl that she's buried with, because I've been going there now all these years and nobody else has ever been. So that 31-year-old lady that she was buried with, she's still having flowers put on her as well. It's not just Alexis. There are times when I still get terribly upset that she's where she is, but it's give closure. And it stopped me from feeling too as guilty as I did, because I didn't know where she was. So I found it a little bit easier to talk about it, because I felt very inadequate that I didn't know where my baby was. And that's what that did to me all those years ago, by people, the way they treated you, made you feel, yeah, inadequate. You weren't a mother. What mother doesn't know where a baby is? So you don't talk about it. You bottle it up. I think it's one of the cruelest things they ever did to people. Because it didn't just happen to me. I've got letters there that it's happened exactly the same to others that have never been able to find where the babies are. And you think it's only you, until people write and tell you their experiences, and it was just the normal thing. I think animals were treated differently than what they treated you when you had a stillborn baby then. Just so cruel.
And you mentioned about being able to mark Christmas and her birthday now. How has that changed how you did celebrate a special day for her before?
The only way we could celebrate and remember her was to put flowers in the house. And we also have a little patch on the back garden that we'd made. And it's a little tiny statue of a newborn baby. And she's got a rose tree on it and flowers around it. And as the seasons change, we change the flowers around it. But now we know where she is. Then we go to the cemetery and put flowers on. Alec always takes the grass clippers to clip the grass back and just tidy it up a bit. And the girls will come along and they'll stick things in the grass. And I'm saying, well, you can't put too much on. Who says we can't? They don't see it like I see it. They'd have had another sister only for that. So they take their bits and pieces and they put their bits on for her. But we still have the little plot outside in the back garden for her as well. So that was all we could do. Just to look through the window and think, that's Alexis out, you know. But now we can go to the cemetery and put flowers on her and know that, yeah, she is in there. And it helps.